Thanks for downloading this podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy wherever they get their podcasts.
We're here at Hockenheim, and we will have a one-hour encounter for the BMW M2 CS Racing Cup, a championship which is across all the different categories in Europe, all the different nations of Europe, in a one-make BMW series. So it should be close racing, and here is the starting grid. Baz Kooten Racing, the number 54 machine, lines up on the pole position thanks to Maxime Oostend. Excuse my bad pronunciation of all these Dutch names. Ex-Swift Racing Events, Willem Meijer will line up alongside him, but was nearly a second slower. So not necessarily too close between those two. Row two has Ferry Monster Autosport of Max Vels, and alongside him, Dirk Varmadam for the second of the Baz Kooten Racing machines. JJ Motorsport, Bieler Edmund with Fred Caprese in fifth position. And then the second of the Ferry Monster Autosport cars, the 74 machine of Jaden Post in sixth spot. Second JJ Motorsport machine, the number 34 car, will be driven in the first stint by Giovanni Scamari. And then we have one car, the first car, in fact, that is shared. The 24 machine of Equipe Verschuur has Alba Jochims and Charles Saltzman aboard that machine. Alumet Motorsport in ninth position has Thomas Magazaris, and then alongside him, Barry Van Elk in Blueberry Racing's number 73. We then have another of the shared cars, the number 35 car of De Vried and De Luy, ahead of Belgium Racing's number 97. And they are in a slightly different category. They're actually racing in the Benelux rather than the Dutch category. And there is a shared car between Janssen and Brams. At the back of the field is the main man himself, Dick Van Elk, who runs the Supercar Challenge and also is one of our support races here. And he lines up on row seven on his own at the back of the field. Cars are heading to the grid, and they do look absolutely beautiful. I have to say, a championship that is now a couple of years old in Europe, a one-make series. It's also simulated in the virtual world as well. A first step into GT racing, into BMW GT racing, Peter Snowden. Don't we love a one-make series where everything is equal between the drivers and the cars?
We do, Ben. It sorts out the men for the machine, if you like, or men and ladies. We can, all sorts of people can take part, not just men. It does, because the car's equal. It's a great series. It's very much, as you say, one make, one model, one specification. It's not just one make. It is that. It's one, literally, specification across the board. And you'll see these in various series throughout the year, supporting this and other things in Asia now as well with this series. And what it does, as you say, it's an entry level for getting drivers experience, track time, etc. They can go on and do all sorts of other series further up the field, as we'll see later on today, the Hankook 24-hour series, 12-hour race this weekend. But they can get into that and into that. They can get into Nürburgring and do VLN, as it was called, now NLS. So they can do different classes in that and probably win the championship from there, as Adrenaline Motorsport do. So it's not just the top category, but it gets you that all-important seat time, which you need at a very comprehensive and capable car, BMW M2 CS, based, of course, on the old M135 originally, and then the 140i's, they came in, 240i's, sorry, this is the two series, not the one series. Getting my BMW sizes mixed up there. Yeah, the 235 and the 240s, and this is onto the new version now, and it's a fantastic piece of kit. And simple question, Ben, would you and I like to be out there on the grid? Yes, we would.
Yeah, I reckon so. Especially looking at the field spread. I think they can slot in there, I reckon. We've got these cars will be featured actually at the Nürburgring 24 Hours, which is happening in a couple of weeks' time, with BMW legends. They've got their own race happening around the GP circuit, interestingly. And so one make, legends in the cars, people like Johnny Giacotto will be piloting them. A perfect platform, as we've seen in many years gone by, the M1 series, a pro car Championship springs to mind with that. These aren't quite as spectacular and sporty as the Pro cars were, but still, one make. And have you had a chance to drive one of these? Because I think they've got them as kind of tuition cars around the world as well.
They have, certainly in the UK. There's places like Goodwood Motor Circuit. They use them as a fleet there. They have an M retail fleet down there. MSV, Motorsport Vision, use them at their circuits as well. We've driven these. We've got the M2 comps, or competitions, as they're called. And stunning little cars. And it's often, I would say, on day-to-day road use and on the track, at this specification, just as much, if not more fun, than, say, a GT4 or even a GT3 car in some ways. That's very, very serious, big boy stuff, GT3s. Whereas this is, it's a lot of fun. They take it very seriously. But as you say, the key thing is, Ben, it's a level playing field because all the cars are identical. But of course, we know they're not, because every preparer's got their own way of interpreting things and doing things and influences they'll put on the car and drivers. But it does broaden, it does flatten the field, if you like, where the performance gap in the vehicle, you haven't suddenly got somebody with a different make saying, what have they got that we haven't got? And you start going away and scratching your head. It's the old mind games that happens always in the pits, as well you know, Ben. You've been there and done it, and even in one make series. But that's, it takes away a level of that concern of what have they got that we haven't? Well, they've got the same car, so what are they doing with it differently? That's the point.
Yeah.
And that's part of what I love about this. It makes it incredibly, incredibly close.
Get yourselves familiar if you are able to watch our stream of the different colours of our cars. As I say, we have 13 machines, some of which have two drivers, most of which have a single driver. We've just got four cars that are shared on our grid, including, I missed out, the number 66, which lines up on the front row. So that looks like it's being started by Willem Meijer, alongside Maxime Hoesend, who is the pole man. Willem will hand over to Lorenzo van Riet, who will take over that car for the second stint of the race. We've also got Pim van Riet aboard in Blueberry Racing's 72 machine. That is starting at the tail of the field. I think we've got Dick Van Elk aboard that car for the first stint. Coming into the stadium section after their warm-up lap, it is a particularly nice day here at Hockenheim. Not a cloud in the sky. And just as we were waiting to get our grid sheets printed out, you can feel the heat starting to really build, to build into the tarmac. And that will then activate the Hankook tyres that are being used not just at this championship level, but across the whole across all of the different race categories that we've got here this weekend at Hockenheim. So, all right, it's 10 o'clock local time, so it's not the peak of the temperature, but the temperature will rise throughout this full hour, and therefore tyre pressure adjustments will also be key when they do pit stops. We're going to have a rolling start for these BMW M2 Racing Cup cars, and this represents then the first of our races here at Hockenheim this weekend. We do have the Supercar Challenge coming up after this, and of course the first part of our 12 hours of Hockenheim for the 24H series. Round the final turn, two by two they come. The speed is actually relatively high for our BMWs. A little bit of field spread at the back of the field, but they all get themselves into a nice order, and a good start from the 27 machine that tries to squeeze his way through from fourth position on the grid to the outside line into turn one and sweep into second spot. That was a fantastic start from Fred Caprese. He gets himself up into second position. Maxime Hoesend holds on to the lead for the moment as they head down to the second turn. Three abreast into third position. Someone going very, very deep, and there is a spinner already. That looks like the number 15 machine of Dick Vadebaum. And he has been spun around, gets himself back going again, but it was contact from somebody else that spun the car around, and he's now dead last at the tail of the field. Here is a replay for those of you watching, and it was a very optimistic lunge from 66, I think.
I'm just trying to get eyes on that. If it is 66, that would be Meijer van Riet. But you say it was a definite lunge, wasn't he? He definitely sent it up the inside there and just never going to make it. And it just got him in the door, didn't he, number 15?
Start under investigation, says Race Direction. So maybe the start was too good from Fred Caprese. He did start on row 3, fifth position on the grid. And by the time he got to turn one, he was into second around the outside. He definitely got a jump on the rest. Did he jump too early? Because, of course, the green light goes on, and that's only then are you allowed to start moving. He is really pushing on, though, as we look at a battle a bit further back for, I think, what is third position. Safety car is being called, though, so I think we might have lost a car down at the I can only imagine down at the hairpin. It's the only bit of track that we can't see.
Yeah, that's for second place, Ben. That's the 14 and 27 car, Max Veals and Fred Caprese, that we were just looking at there. She said, but just as Fred Caprese was about to take that 5-2 positions from the first corner at the start into P1, he, the safety car, exactly as you said at the safety car, he got the same message clearly and just backed out of it and didn't take Maxime Oosten, the number 54 car, for the run down the inside. So positions held as we have first safety car of this race.
Now, who are we missing? Giovanni Scamaradi, the number 34 machine, hasn't completed the second sector of the lap. So that is the car that seems to be missing. Here is that lunge once more. Boom. And I think that is the 66. No, it's the 34. So that is the car we are now missing. So presumably with that contact, bends the steering and has to park it up on the side of the road.
Okay, sufficient impact on the door there. It looks like it's done the left front steering and done a toe link or an arm or something, hasn't it? You said it was a lunge, and it was a lunge with a fairly serious contact at the end of it.
I do. You know, you get that sensation, don't you, every so often when you put your foot on the brake hard and it doesn't quite do what you imagine. There is the 34 car, which is parked up on the parabolica, so the big, long, sweeping left-hander that takes you down to the hairpin at the very back of the circuit, the kind of the link road, if you like, between the two parts of the old Hockenheim. I still refer to it. The last time I was here, it was the old version. That was a long time ago, and I still remember where the commentary box was. But
you must have been coming here as a child then.
I
love it when people of your age refer to Sega as the old circuit.
Yeah, 96 Formula One Grand Prix of Germany. Would have been.
You were in a buggy, though.
I was 11 years old watching my dad commentate. Yeah, that was the last time I was here.
I was trying to help you there, Ben.
So the 34 machine parked up on the link road.
That's one of our Benelux entries, isn't it? Giovanni Scamaradi, yeah.
Interestingly, for me, the two JJ Motorsport drivers have very Italian names, Scamaradi and Caprese, but are effectively and officially Belgian and driving in the Benelux Championship, which has only one other entry in it, or one other category of car, which is Belgium Racing's National Auto Club car of Brams and Janssens, who are in eighth position right now. So, driver out of the 34 machine. I think he just put his foot on the brake and it just didn't slow down like he was expecting it to, because you could see him dive to the inside before turn two and just the car didn't have the retardation. These do have ABS, don't they?
Yes, they will have, but it's, as you say, potentially, no matter how much you warm the brakes up on that formation lap. And we did see the field of all 16 as they came into the stadium section on that formation lap before they have to get into final grid order, before they come around the last two sweeps onto the pit straight. They were doing that accelerating and braking, so they're accelerating the brakes, trying to get some heat into the discs, which then dissipates down through the hubs and hopefully gets through the wheel and into the tyres. So it's a little bit of knock-on effect into getting the tyres a bit warmer as well. But the principal thing is trying to have not cold brakes and cold brain first corner or first lap, and that's unfortunately it's a downfall of many a driver over the years in series across the world, and it has certainly caught out 34 there. I think you're absolutely right, Ben. It just he hit the brakes and they just didn't respond the way he would normally expect. Two laps later, they probably would.
Cold brain is definitely something that is very effective when you're the first cars on track of the day, right? I mean, it's not particularly late. It's 10 o'clock in the morning, but for those that have enjoyed their evening the night before, and many of these drivers will be gentlemen drivers who are here for a good time as well as being racing drivers, they might, you know, need an extra coffee to wake themselves up in the morning, and if your first wake up is a big heavy braking zone into turn two and you get it slightly wrong, unfortunately those things happen.
But that's exactly what we said about this being a preliminary series to going up to other levels. It's part of the disciplines you will learn. Ready for when you go up to those bigger categories where the cars and the consequences and the bills and invoices are slightly more serious as you get further up the field, and the bigger the car, the bigger the bill, and the series for that matter.
Whilst we are under safety car conditions, it shouldn't be too long before we clear the car that is stricken, although if it is bent steering, it'll be a little tricky to tow, so we'll see how they progress with that.
It may require a lift, mightn't it?
It might require a lift, and that means a lot longer behind the safety car. They do have a six-round calendar, as you would expect, the majority of the Benelux Cup in Holland, with two visits to Zandvoort. They've already been there once. The Supercar Madness Festival in the week before Easter was their first round of the championship. They'll also visit Zolder in June, weekend of Le Mans, which is always a poor weekend to choose for to go racing, because everybody wants to watch Le Mans. And then
only if it's not at Le Mans.
Well, yes, exactly.
To go racing anywhere but Le Mans that weekend.
Yes, exactly. Supercar Madness weekend at Assen at the end of October, and the Spa Racing Festival. So they get a chance to go to all the premier, well, I suppose all of the circuits in Holland. And so this is their away day, if you like, at Hockenheim to race in Germany. And as I say, they do have two splits. So they do have a Benelux entry list and then a Dutch entry list. The Dutch entry list has 10 cars. And the Benelux has three cars, but it now has two, because one of them is parked up beside the road. Give me a few seconds, and I'll be able to tell you exactly how the first round of the championship played out at Zandvoort.
Sorry, Ben, I thought you were pausing for a second. Safety car still leading them round, and all line astern, behaving properly, and there's that... that part now for the driver where you sit there and think, we've got to watch those safety car lights. And I'm not sure, Ben, whether these level of cars will have pit-to-car communications or not. I think unlikely. Of course, I'm going to be corrected immediately that by the collective who will know the answer to that. So, hence, I'm kind of putting it out there. But if they don't, then your drivers have got to be aware. You're looking at the boards all the way around, and the safety car lights will go out, obviously, with a fair warning. And then you hold formation again, exactly as basically just a restart, exactly as the original start was, and around onto the start-finish straight. Keeping a close eye on that Audi estate at the front, the safety car with us. They'll be back into our site very shortly.
Is it an Audi?
It is, yes.
How criminal. Because the safety car at the start of the race was the BMW.
I did notice. I did notice and I did wonder. And now I've said it, it's out there.
They've literally had to change cars. The safety car driver's obviously been very, very fast to get out of one car and into the next. There is the plain liveried BMW M2. And that is Dick Van Elk, I believe, in that car. He's actually had quite a good start. I'm sure he was starting at the tail end of the field, but got himself up into seventh after the first lap. So a very, very good start from Dick Van Elk. He's going to hand over, as I said earlier, to Pim van Riet for the second half of this race. I am going on my timing screens as to who's in these cars, so apologies if I got it round the wrong way. But we do now have lights out on the safety car. The safety car is heading off into the distance, and we will therefore go back racing with 50 minutes still to go, and the pit window in the middle of that 50 minutes to get our second drivers in, if there is a need to. If there's not, then the drivers, of course, still have to come into the pits. They still have to sit in the pits and wait. I'm not sure they have to do anything silly like get out the car, run around the car and get back in, like we've seen in the Bell Car series a few moons ago. Tyres and brakes will need to get back up to temperature, but the field is nicely compressed, and Maxime Oostend is controlling the pace well, but he's not going to get a break here from Fred Caprese. They go back to green flag racing, and Fred is right on the tail. After a very, very strong start, he is looking very racy going into turn one. Not quite close enough to take a big dive down in there. It's no real braking zone into turn one here at Hockenheim. So fast, you really have to be committed. But the place to do it is the big braking zone into turn two. And is he close enough? There's a changing further back going on. I think that was the Akeep Vechur car losing a position. Joachims and Zoltzman are down to 10th position now. And now they head on to the big Parabolica, slightly hooking left all the way around down to the back end of the circuit, the furthest point away from the paddock. And another change of position further back. The 66 car for third position, is that? Yes, it is.
Yep.
So that is Meyer Willem Meijer going up into third ahead of Max Vels, who's not had a particularly strong start from his better qualifying position. No change at the head of the field, though. Maxime Hoesten still does lead from Fred Caprese as they come back towards the stadium section. In the Mercedes Arena right now, left slow left-hander and then accelerating right-hander back onto the old part of the circuit, the drag strip. Sometimes also used and was the start finishing line for World Rallycross for a few years as well.
We did also lose 498, Hoekstra de Jong in the number 498 into the pitch just before that safety car came into the pit and presumably not continuing, Ben.
It looked close between our front two, didn't it, as we went back to green flag racing, but Maxime Hoesten has got himself into the rhythm. Fred Caprese at the moment not close enough to do anything. It's either quite equidistant between our cars.
Yeah, he did have a go at that sort of restart, but Max Hoesten did control that, and it's now got him gapped perfectly. As you say, that first turn, not really that much of an opportunity, but there's a big runoff area on the left-hand side, and of course we've got to be very conscious, these drivers, of track limits. You've got to stay within the white and blue markers on the outside of the curbing, on the outside of the track, but it's not a physical curb, it's just coloured, and there's a big runoff area there from the F1 days, of course. That first, imagine 20-odd Formula 1 cars going into there, you'd need that runoff, wouldn't you?
And there's been some pretty hefty incidents over the years over there, wasn't there? In fact, there's a skid mark down there that I can't remember whose that is, but you know, when YouTube these days shows you all the accidents across the weekend,
get them to sign it.
yeah, exactly. You know, oh yes, that skid mark is from. There was a remarkable comments from those that went to the WEC event at Spa-Francorchamps last weekend and couldn't believe that there was already skid marks going up Eau Rouge, considering it had only just been re-tarmacked. What they didn't know, of course, is that we went there the weekend before, and therefore the RD Signs Lamborghini skid mark on the entrance to Eau Rouge still sits proudly as the first marker on the Eau Rouge and the barrier, unfortunately, where it ended up. It's good to see that car back in the 12 hours race that we have coming up for you this afternoon. But we keep our focus for the moment on the BMW M2 Cup. And this is the battle for fifth position, Jayden Post and Dirk Varmadam. And Dirk actually was one of those cars that didn't have a particularly good start. Little bit of over-rotation from Jayden Post there. The rear end just not quite sticking, but he's got a good livery, hasn't he? I like that. Grey, brawn yellow and white.
Big push for second place change here. This is Maya van Riet now really on the boot lid of Fred Caprese. They are just 1.3 second across the line. I don't think it was, 0.1 of a second across the line. I guess I thought it was close. I'm misreading my lines there. But never mind. Fred Caprese thinking about catching up with Maxime Hoesten. Maxime Hoesten, as I said, has got it gapped 1.5 seconds. But it's Maya van Riet who's now giving Fred Caprese really, really hard time.
And a change eventually. Dirk Varmadam getting down the inside of Jayden Post at turn two and moving himself up into fifth position. So that is place change. And now Dirk Varmadam will be hoping to get his head down and chase down Max Vils, who is in fourth. But there's a good gap between the two of them, about 1.5 seconds. And as you say, what is happening for second position? Fred Caprese, absolutely stunning on cold tyres on that first lap of the race, but as the temperatures have gone up into the rest of the cars, he's looking more under threat than threatening.
Yeah, very tight times at the top here, Ben, all in the 151s. The top, six cars, with one exception, which is the fifth place card of Jayden Post. He's on a 52.4, but within half a second of 51 seconds all at the front. Nice and tight, 51.3, 6.4. So actually that third place man is pushing on, as I said, but giving Caprese a hard time. Not quite managed to achieve it into the stadium section at the back with this time. He's lost it back a little bit, dropped back a couple of car lengths, which if we don't look out, is going to put fourth place man right into position as well. That's going to become a three-way battle for second place, and that's Max Vils in the 14 car. He's now getting in touch again, or starting to reel in. 1.5 seconds it was for Maxime Hoesten at the front on the last lap. 0.1 to second to third place, and then 1.3 seconds. They cross the line. It's a little bit further out this time. The gap is 0.4 this time for the second to third place, and pretty well the same 1.5 seconds at the front still. So, as we said, Maxime Hoesten is gapping it perfectly, and he's just matched, just gone slightly quicker. No, not quite. Fastest lap time is Maxime Oostum, 151.346. Second place in that position in the times. Fred Caprese, 151.364. Pretty close there, as we said. Equal equipment.
And Fred is having to defend here, coming into the hairpin. Had to put his car right into the centre of the racetrack to defend from Willem Meijer, who now tries a switchback and lays a couple of 11s on the exit. That's given him good traction, amazingly, to give him the inside line as they come into the Mercedes Arena. It's a pretty fast right-hand flick. The car drifts across the tarmac. He keeps the car on the racing line, on the racetrack. He's still a bit offline, but he's just about there and just about holding on. Fred Caprese has the racing line, but can't find a way back through, and therefore the moment has lost second position, but fights back on the exit of the Mercedes-Benz Arena because he had a better exit, giving him the inside line for the entry into the stadium section, and Fred gets himself back into second. He'll now be compromised coming in to the sash curve, but has the inside line enough. All of that fighting, of course, means that they're slower on this lap and have invited Max Vales and Dirk Vamadam to join the party for second, and moreover given Max Oosten even more of breathing space at the head of our field. Gap was 1.5 seconds after the last lap. Max comes over the line now. We still wait for Fred to get his lap time in, and it's doubled. 3 seconds now the gap, and a great battle for second position, with the fastest man on track so far setting the fastest lap of the race, Dirk Vamadam, on the tail of this group, presumably benefiting from a bit nice slipstream around the Parabolica and down the start, finishing straight.
Well, I didn't think that was going to work for Meijer van Riet. I really didn't. As you say, that tight, you laid a couple of number 11s, got on the power, really did the tight line, didn't he? Didn't open up the steering and use the whole width of the track at all. And I thought, it's going to slow, he's going to compromise at the apex there and just wouldn't work. And thought, he's going to just fly past me again. And he didn't. Had another 4 corners before it took place. So great driving there from what is still our third place man, 66, Meijer van Riet. But as you said, quite rightly, Ben, it's now invited everybody else in. So we've now got a four-car train for second place.
Epic lunge from Vamadam into the hairpin this time, but a little bit too deep, so had to run wide on the exit. And that has invited and allowed Max Vales back through in the battle for fourth position. It was one long train for second, but because of that, they've separated into two separate battles. And somehow, for the moment, this lap, Fred Caprese holds on ahead of Willem Meijer, who will be handing over his car to Lorenzo van Riet in the second half of this race. And, of course, that adds an extra element. How fast is Lorenzo in comparison to Willem Meijer? And, therefore, can they keep this car where it is? He's the only shared car in the top 9 positions. The next one is the Van Elk and van Riet. Number 72 machine, which is that all-white machine we saw a little bit earlier on. That was 7th, but has dropped down to 9th position now. Best of the Netherlands trophy category. Very, very close. Once more, over the finishing line for 2nd position, but thinking better of it. Meijer drops into 3rd position. Takes quite a lot of curb on the inside of the first turn, and the BMW M2 bobbles its way through the first turn. Later on the brakes into turn 2, but not close enough to go down the inside. Almost pushing Fred Caprese through turn 2. Such was it, so close. He wants to keep that momentum going, though, because, of course, he wants to carry the momentum all the way down the Parabolica to give an opportunity to get down the inside at the next braking zone, which is a hairpin. He tried it 2 laps ago. It didn't work. But he did get past at one point. Here is the push through the turn. What I want to see is the result, which is going to be happening around now at the hairpin.
I don't think there was contact. It was very close.
And there's no change of position at the hairpin for second, but Dirk Vamadam is in 4th position. So we have seen a change there for 4th ahead of Max Vales. And as I said, Vamadam has been the fastest man on circuit. The best lap of the race from Maxime Oostende last time. So these tyres are still getting better. The times are still getting better. They're still able to settle in and find more lap time. Max Oostende's fastest lap now, a 51.047, is still a second and a half off what he managed in qualifying. I wonder what Willem Meijer could do if he could clear Fred Caprese, who was incredibly fast starting from 5th on the grid. under investigation from race stewards, but in race trim hasn't quite found the pace. Interestingly, Caprese has been doing rallycross and rallying over the last couple of years in the French Championship. Misses the apex massively through the penultimate turn. Surely that's going to invite Mayer down the inside, but you don't want to really overtake it to turn one, do you, Peter?
Not at all, but car 15, Dirk Varmadam, my apologies, has now had not one but two black and white flag warnings for track limits. We were discussing that just a little bit earlier, weren't we? And he's had two of them, so a third one, and it's going to be a little bit of a problem.
There's our leader. Look in the background. I think Mayo was lining up a change for the lead of the race. It looked like it was getting very, very close. Just name-checking Maxime Moustain, just reminding ourselves that there is still a leader out there. 5 seconds to the good. Let's see if we have had a change for second position as they complete the second sector of the lap. It's very, very close. It's side by side coming into the chicane, to the hairpin, sorry. And there is a change now. So Caprese drops down to third position and Mayer up to second spot. And actually Caprese, because of that jeopardising racing line, now under pressure from, I think, the fastest man of these four, Dirk Varmadam. Very sideways, rally-style drifting into the Mercedes-Benz arena. But he just doesn't seem strong enough under the brakes. In the braking zones, Fred Caprese is losing time. He's good through the corners, if a little scrappy, but it does seem as though he's always slightly earlier on the brakes.
I'd certainly agree. It is pulling up a bit more than the other, because again, they had Dirk Varmadam right almost into the back of him. And not quite, again, no contact, but if anything, I think he had to lock up a little bit there, Dirk Varmadam, just to miss the back of the 27, Fred Caprese, right in front of them. Both of them running wide there onto the, within the limits, though, because Dirk Varmadam can't afford to have another track limits warning, but they're totally within the rules of the track there, but certainly as wide as you possibly can within that envelope.
Very wide out the final turn for Caprese, whose car looks like it's moving around a lot as well on the tarmac. It doesn't look like it's stuck to the road, does it?
I was thinking exactly the same. It just looks a bit of a handful, doesn't it, to be honest?
Kind of floaty. Drifting all over the road. But I do, from my experience of, my limited experience of sim racing in these cars and seeing them racing in various different categories, they do look like cars that do a lot of moving about on the road. They don't look like they're kind of being planted to the ground because of the limited aero, I imagine, on the car. They'd look a bit touring car styling.
Well, they're very much a road-based car, aren't they? They're a production-based car with modifications. Obviously, the safety requirements required to go racing. Safety these days, of course, very different to how we did many, many years ago. So proper cages, tanks, seats, all the really, really important stuff. But in terms of performance, they're probably going to be stock engines, and it's going to be ECUs and things that make the differences along the line. So they're pretty well a road-based car with some upgrades performance-wise, but all the safety measures. So, of course, they're going to move around. So perhaps we're being a little bit harsh there, Ben. Maybe he's just driving it a bit harder, having to get trying to wring its neck.
What we do see, certainly from the Dirk Varmadam, I've seen this a couple of times, when he gets on the brakes, the tail does a lot of wagging. Just because he's unloading the rear end of the car. And, of course, there's not much loading that rear end. Engine in the front, over the front axle. So when you do get hard on the brakes, the rear end just starts to just waggle around a little bit. We've seen him locking up a couple of times, but the cars will also have ABS. They'll have traction control too. They just take a little bit of time to settle when they, these guys who are obviously trying to exploit the curbs. And, oh, very, very messy. But Dirk Varmadam, messy for a reason. Into the pits. He was trying to tighten the apex of the first turn. It looked like a very unconventional racing line. But Dirk Varmadam is the first of our pitters. So the window is open, and it will be open for the next 10 minutes. And let's just see how long it takes for Dirk to do his pit stop. What do they do to the car, if anything at all? They are counting down his time. It will be an obligatory time to stay in pit lane, so everyone's pit stops will be exactly the same. Does look as though they're putting in some fuel, interestingly, into the car. So you are able to refuel during the stops.
And so classic BMWs, these, aren't they? 3 litre inline, straight sixes, rear-wheel drive. What is interesting is I'm not sure, Ben, exactly which configuration these are in, but they can vary depending on balance of performance as issued by the governing body, whichever series they're in, but they can vary from 280 to 365 horsepower. And there is an ultimate version if you wish, obviously depending on the series and the rules and the regs, but they can get up to, you ready for this, 450 horsepower out of this end little 3 litre in a tiny little M2, as I'm going to call it, BMW size. It's a small car. 7-speed paddle shift gearbox. Things have moved on. They're so advanced now, aren't they? 300-plus horsepower, 7-speed gearbox is in what is effectively a road car.
I feel like that would be quite leery.
I think so. It sounds like, smells like fun to me, that does.
Number 24, Equipe Vichot, also into pit lane. They were at the tail of the field, but they do have Charles Schwarzman, I think, getting aboard that car, which means Albert Jochims has jumped out. Schwarzman has been around a while. If you look at his license number, an interesting way of analysing how long somebody has been racing is their license number. Charles Schwarzman's license number 6,000th, whereas some of the other drivers in this field 35,000, 49,000. So Schwarzman's been a while. He's a well-seasoned competitor, much like Dick Van Elk, whose license number is 8,000. So amazing! They've got they've issued over 50,000 licenses in Holland. Holland's not a big country to have that many licenses issued. Especially when you consider that our Polish entry has license 208.
Presumably the same system applies in the governing issuing body of the Motorsport UK.
Yes, and your license number is, Peter?
4,000-something.
4,000? Wow, gosh.
Yes.
I can't remember mine now.
Oh, probably 11,000 or something, because you're a whippersnapper.
That's
a very young person for a non-UK audience.
Yes. Into the pits now comes the De Vried De Luy car. We haven't seen too much of that. And Max Vils is also in the pits from second position. So this is when it all gets very confusing for the next couple of laps, because the order is not quite how it should be or was. We are having a driver change in that. Oh, that's a nice livery. Very nice. That's the kind of livery you'd be okay with on the road, isn't it?
I was going to say, I'd drive that on the road.
Yeah,
but
blue.
I thought you were going to say you would.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, black, matte blue with black matte stripes and a nice black bumper and roof. I think these cars have carbon roofs, haven't they? That's one of the things about the M2s and the M4s. Certainly, back in the day, the M4 or the M3, sorry, used to have a carbon roof. It's one of its big sort of selling points in the early days. Maxime Oosten comes over the line to complete another lap in the lead of the race. And the top couple of cars complete.
It's a CFC roof, apparently.
A CFC
roof? CFC roof, no. Carbon fibre composite.
Technology.
We just call them carbon.
Carbon,
it's a black roof. Yeah, it's a CFC, yes.
Jaden Post is now into pits to serve his mandatory change. And presumably also get refueled by the looks of things, if you're able to do that. And what we will now be looking for is to see if the timing screens light up once more as these two driver cars have their second driver getting in. Does that mean that suddenly they've got more pace? Good little scrap on track. Nice livery from the 73 car, which is Barry Van Elk, trying to find a way past the Janssens and Brams machine. Now, I think that's actually Steve Brams getting past. So he's taken over Steve Brams from Juri Janssens for Belgian Racing. This is one of the Belgian entries, the 97 car. They effectively are racing against Fred Caprese. That's the Belgian contingent, although the Janssen Brams are part of the Trophy Cup and Fred Caprese is not in that. So actually, if you are looking at a timing screen, you'll see that they are leading their category as well. Ooh, very close in the pit lane as Jaden Post comes in and the 35 leaves just at the same time. Luckily, no contact and everyone gets away with it. Starting to get a little bit closer between... Well, I suppose everything's just changing around at the moment.
I was going to say, it's got to settle down, hasn't it?
I'm not going to look at the timing screen for the next couple of laps. We'll just wait for everyone to do their pit stops, and then we can start referencing it again.
Well, you can do it, but you'll just confuse me.
Well, exactly, yeah.
Not you, you'll just confuse me.
And all of our viewers and listeners. Into the pits comes the 27 machine, which is Fred Caprese. So he will not be changing drivers. He will simply be sitting in the pits. Bit of heat soak behind him, that battle that we were watching just a second ago between Thomas Magares and the very flamboyantly liveried Barry Van Elk. So we've got four cars in pits right now serving their mandatory stop.
It's kind of the car you just commented on, which is the which one to come back, the multicolour one. It's almost it's an art car, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I think there was an art car in that very same livery a couple of years ago. On track, we do have a battle here. Jaden Post just out the pits. I want to say being passed by the 54. And that's just being lapped. Okay, so that's Jaden Post being scared off the circuit by Maxime Oostende, who is the 54 car, and just putting a lap on him, but hasn't pitted, so he's not that far behind. There will be, once Maxime comes and takes his pit stop, that will be sorted once more. It's interesting stacking going on in pit lane as well. The 97 car looks as though he might be in the way a little bit. Fred Caprese leaves the pits, doesn't get boxed in.
But it's behind the work line, so that's okay. But you say there's a little bit of stacking system going on there, isn't there?
Yeah, I feel sorry. The number seven machine has got himself out cleanly, but had to get around the 97 car that was parked. So those two pit stops are now done. Caprese back out of the circuit. We wouldn't expect the pit stops to have much of an effect in terms of strategy, because green flag racing, all right, if you are in a battle with somebody, you get yourself on a different part of the circuit for a couple of laps, and sometimes that makes a difference. But with this field, only 13 cars, the pit stops are regulated by time, so nobody really should be losing or gaining from the pit stops. It is really just a system to allow two drivers to race as a team in the car, and therefore get one out, get one in, including our all-white machine that now comes into the pits lane just in front of me, which is the Blueberry Racing Dick Van Elk, who will hand over, I think, to Pim Van Riet. I don't know. I actually have no basis to tell you whether that's right or wrong, because my timing screen shows both the drivers. Does your timing screen? Yeah, your timing screen shows both the drivers as well, and so does my entry list. So I have been. The only way I know is if the graphics comes up and shows us which car is in, which driver is in the car at any given moment. So that could well be the other way around with the shared cars. But Guillaume Meyer was definitely in the 66. Still not pitted, by the way, so still not handed over to Van Riet, the Lorenzo Van Riet, who will be getting into that car. Maxime Oostende is shown as on his outlap, so he must have come into pit lane last time as well.
Yeah, he did, and as did Caprese's out now as well, isn't he? In fact, he'd be on a run lap now, won't he? So Maxime Oostende pitting, but no driver change.
Caprese very wide through turn one because he's got a lot of pressure from Dirk Vermeidam behind him. Vermeidam later on the brakes going into turn two, and Caprese's run deep as well, so allowed him alongside, but the circuit goes left now, so Vermeidam on the outside dips a wheel over the curb and just loses a little bit of momentum. The car squirming underneath him, needs to get back under the rear wing of Fred Caprese to benefit from a slipstream. But actually Caprese doesn't look particularly fast in a straight line, does he? He's tried to run Vermeidam to the outside of Parabolica, which is the inside line into the hairpin. Vermeidam very aggressive, late turn in to just make sure there is no chance of an overlap. There's a lot of drifting going on from Fred Caprese. Some 11s laid down on the inside of the hairpin, but it hasn't given it enough momentum, and Vermeidam moves up into, I think, what will be third position, depending on where the Meyer Van Riet car comes out. We do expect, of course, Maxime Oostende to continue to lead the race. A little mistake, though, from Vermeidam in the Mercedes Arena. Runs a little bit wide, and Caprese is coming back at him.
Yeah, giving him exactly what he needs. I tell you what, Fred Caprese, he's not worried about rear tyre wear, is he, Ben? They've obviously got a lot of grip left on those tyres, or not, as it appears, because he's leaving number 11s and drifting almost all the places. Seems to get, as we said, doesn't seem to be so good on the brakes into the corners, but it's certainly got hasn't got the traction, but it's getting out of the corners really quite extraordinarily.
I think we've now completed all of our pit stops. Last car has just left.
The leader's still in. I think 66 is still in, I think.
that. We'll head down to Chris Dawes, who's in the pits for us in just a second. But here is turn... Well, actually, that's a track limit infringement in a place I don't think they're monitoring. Just four wheels off the circuit, but I think...
Doesn't count, then.
Well, it doesn't really, does it? Because to monitor track limits, you need to have a human watching the track limits at those particular points.
So they've or put sensors.
They've put a... Yes, if you're in the UK, and there's track people who've actually put sensors in, but I'm not sure there are sensors in many tracks around Europe. So, and also, they cost money to start up and all the rest of it. So I think there are humans out there at turn two, turn six, and turn 11, and neither of those were that turn. So he should be able to get away with that one. Let's go down to Chris Dawes, who can tell us how the pit stops have been.
Yeah, it's just a very quick update. The 70... Oh, I don't know, which one was it? 72. And you were assuming it was Dick Van Auken and Pim Van Riet taking over. Pim Van Riet is doing the whole race. Dick is doing tomorrow's race. So that was the answer on us. Because I stood there and thinking, there's no driver change going on. Asked the team and they said, no, Dick Van Auken's racing tomorrow. So that was the answer there. It was, quite fraught down here at times, wasn't it, Ben? Because they were double-stacking and accelerating out, not really aware that there was a car coming behind them. So it was freaky at times, despite not being the busiest of pit lanes.
Just 13 cars in our field. Thank you very much, Chris Dawes. And we have now got everybody through. Pit window is now shut. So we are awaiting the completion of the outlap for the Meyer Van Riet machine. Which should now have Lorenzo Van Riet aboard that car to work out the gap between Maxi Moussen, who now comes across the line to lead this race. Second position with a gap of 5.3 seconds is Lorenzo Van Riet. And then a bit of a gap, actually, to our battle for third position. Now, Dick Farmerdam, Fred Caprese, Maxi Vils, the three cars all together in that order. With 15 seconds behind Maxi Moussen, and then a bit of a gap before we get to our next machine. So really losing out, actually, in the pit stops was Jaden Post, who's dropped down to seventh spot and a good 15 seconds back from where he was before the stop. So that hasn't worked out particularly well for Jaden Post. Now behind our Polish entry, Tomasz Magyarz, who is 30 seconds back. So 20 minutes, just over 20 minutes still remaining. There is on our screens Meyer Van Riet machine, which should have Lorenzo Van Riet aboard it now.
I was going to say, is it Lorenzo or Meyer? Because we've got Meyer on our screen, but maybe Chris can confirm whether there was a driver change in that 66 entry for us or not. We didn't see that.
Oh, yeah, how confusing is that? You can actually have two drivers and not do a driver change.
Yeah, exactly my point. Chris Dawes, eyes on in the pit lane. Did you see a driver change? Yeah. And he's going to... I'm sure he's down there saying, thank you so much for that one.
Here's a subject that we were talking about over dinner last night. Four cars under investigation for having their pit stops too short. Now, Peter, a pit stop is monitored from pit in to pit out, but the team can only really control the bit where they're actually stopped. So how on earth do you get it wrong and end up with your pit stop too short?
Well, it's obviously down to speeding, isn't it, in the pit lane is one of the obvious options. You've got an elapsed time, as you say, from the pit in the line. You come down to the control speed of the pit lane. I would have thought these cars would be electronically controlled. There'd be a pit limit button on the steering wheel normally. I'm not completely familiar with the BMW CT as well. We'll go and find that out ready for tomorrow's race. But if you know the answer, then let us know. But I would have thought a level of this racing, certainly with it being sort of an approach to bigger level racing, there'd be a pit limiter on it, so you would normally, but you'd slow down to that. But of course, it depends on whether you hit the button at the right time. It's still, we rely on technology so much. You made a great comment a few minutes ago about the track limit sensors and whatever, and we are so reliant on technology in these, Ben, that you actually said, I think there's a human at that corner, as if it was old school. But it is down to the drivers here. Yes, you have this elapsed time. You've got to slow the car down pit entrance, obviously. The reason the pit lane speed limit is safety, obviously, with mechanics, marshals, everybody around, personnel. That's the most important bit. Drivers have their fun out on track. Pit lane's got to be safe and controlled. If you don't hit that button at the right time, you can just go over by a short amount. And it can be literally as much as, you know, as a second. I've had an experience last year racing where we had a pit stop where it's a controlled 1 minute, like British GT, and you have a set time. and it was too short by 1 second. So you're given a drive-through penalty. So you lose so much more in reality. It's not the 1 second you lose, because that's easy. You'd rather it was added on at the end of the meeting, end of the race, wouldn't you? But a drive-through costs you whatever the elapsed time is, say,
yeah,
you know, 73 seconds,
yeah,
or something. You're just like, oh, right, so I've actually just given away, you know, nearly a minute and a half or whatever, minute 10.
We did have this situation in Spa, the last round of the 12 hours, and I do think we got ridiculously tiny penalties. We got like 0.2 of a second penalty as we have a change for sixth position. That is Jaden Post, who's been attacking for a while.
Just of note, Ben, sorry, those cars under investigation, we didn't say. The one that's probably most important is number 66. That's the Mayor Van Riet's second place car, which will be Mayor or Lorenzo Van Riet, we're not sure, in that car. So the second place car is under investigation.
Yeah, and both Van Elks as well. So both of the Blueberry Racing machines, the 73, the 72, and Thomas Magalhães, our Polish driver. So four cars under investigation. But as I say, last time we had penalties from the 24H series stewards, they were reflection of how much had been under. So it wasn't too horrible a penalty. Here is 74 giving it some beans. We saw him early on in the lap on the brakes turning into turn two and losing the rear end. There he lost the rear end from a very different reason.
Yeah, it's just it's interesting, the different driving styles and techniques. You said these cars move around quite a bit, and some of them just seem screwy under braking. Some of them seem a bit over-seery on the exit, and I'm not sure whether it's just down to sort of drivers just, you know, throttle inputs to
hooning.
Hooning. Basically, yes. Yeah, exactly. Just having just goofing around, as they say.
So first of the cars to receive a drive-through penalty from the pit stop being too short is the number 73 machine of Barry Van Elk. So they're going to get horrible penalties if they have been slightly short. Race direction obviously not taking the lead from Spa. They're always different race stewards and different stewards, and therefore full penalties going the way of the 73. And if they are investigating the other three cars, then you would kind of expect there to have been a report that is too short, and therefore it's a bit of a slam dunk kind of, you know, investigation for jumping the start tends to be because they've already jumped the start.
Yeah, but it says all four are getting drive-through penalties, doesn't it?
Does it? It's not just 73.
No, it says car 7, 66, 72 and 73 get drive-through penalties, pit stops too short, as were all four under investigation. So it is a race control update at 41 and 35. Yeah, so it's with 16 minutes to go, that's going to completely change the face of this race, isn't it, Ben?
Well, it does remove that 66 car out of second position. So now Dirk Vamadam up into second spot. Not yet, but when that drive-through penalty is taken. Caprese will move up to third. Max Veels will move up to fourth. Imagine even Jaden Post might get himself up into fifth position. Into the pits comes Barry Van Elk to serve his penalty. But the other three cars, 7, 73 and 72, down 7th, 8th and 9th spot. So less significant for our race. And this race that we are watching on screen is also not really much significance now that the 7 car also has a pit stop. Entertaining as it is, because they are getting the cars moving around, sliding about. And they are certainly looking like they could be fun, if not challenging to get right, but fun to drive.
Yeah, exactly. So just for clarification, the penalty is just a drive through, isn't it? There's no,
seems to be,
no,
yeah.
So I just saw the sort of three quarters of the pit lane.
Still, it's gonna be 15, yeah, 20 seconds, isn't it?
And the rest. Yeah. I'd say it's probably 25 or more in reality. Because it's quite a long pit in here as well.
Yeah, it's true.
So you've got quite a quick there. It's quick on the exit, quick exit, but the pit in's quite long. So
where is the pit lane speed limit though? Is it actually
right up here? Quite a long way out.
Yeah, so you can go quite hard into pits if you don't bin it through the right hand.
But that can cause you the problem in the first place. Yeah. So it's cause and effect, isn't it? So you stop very quickly on the pit in before the race control building's there.
Yeah, so that's the 66 car from second position coming in hard, and he is very, very fast through the final corner of the lap, the inside corner. Then there's a little chicane, but he's flat out into that, and then hard on the pit lane speed limiter all the way through the working area of the pit lane, pit out, back off the pit lane speed limiter, back onto the track. Who comes past? 27. So, wow, he hasn't lost that much time. He slots back into what is going to be fourth position. He's lost just two positions there. And you would say he could probably get quite quickly back past Fred Caprese here.
Yeah, of course, we're not suggesting it's going to happen today, but we have seen it before. The ultimate ignominy or the walk of shame is to be caught speeding, serving a pit lane penalty, and doing exactly the same thing again. Yeah. Just like, you're so frustrated, you're like, oh, I've got to do the drive through, and as you do, and you do the muttly bit, and so come in and lock at the brakes and just miss it over the line and come in 2Ks over or something, and it's do it again.
Now, usually there is some marshal in pit lane with a speed gun. That's the kind of the cheapest way to monitor pit lane speed limits and speeding in pit lane.
Employ a human.
Employ a human, yeah. I don't actually see one, unless there is one down at pit out.
It is one way of controlling it, having a marshal pointing a gun at you, isn't it,
in the
pit lane?
Yeah.
Oh, you mean a speeding gun.
Yeah.
Sorry, right. I was going to say, that would
do not speed. Yes,
a warning, yeah. I'll slow you down.
There is a marshal... There is a marshal at pit in, but she looks as though she might be monitoring teams coming into the working lane, the pits, rather than with a pit lane speed limit gun. So,
well, perfectly positioned, actually, if you think about it, pointing down the pit lane as they've stopped and just gone past. That's the time to pick up the speed, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Because that's where they're going to be speeding, attacking pit in. Fred Caprese has already been passed by Lorenzo Van Riet. As we have a change further back, that's way down the field, isn't it? That is the number 35 getting past number 72 with Pim van Riet doing the whole of the race in that number five, the white 72 machine, having now served the penalty right at the tail end of our field. But we have Maxime Oostende and Dirk Varmadam, our top two. So one position lost, therefore, to... the Meyer Van Riet 66 car because of the penalty. 3.3 seconds between Varmadam and that 66 car. We've got 11 minutes or 12 minutes remaining. The question will be, has the 66 car got the pace in this part of the race to close down that gap and get back into second before race end? That would be impressive. I think it could be possible if they can find their best laps right now. Varmadam out on his own, 17 back from Maxime Oostende. So that has been a really mighty performance from pole position in the 54, under attack for the first couple of laps, but Fred Caprese definitely good on cold tyres and certainly fading as this race has worn on.
So fastest lap of the race, 1:51.047 from our race leader, Maxime Oostende. I did think that would probably just dip under, because you said that was a... I thought it would dip under the 51s. I thought we'd see sort of mid-50s, potentially. And you did say that was about a second and a half off the pole position time, wasn't it?
49.5.
49.591, yeah, exactly. So it's my apologies for...
Oh, there he is, look. He is, I just couldn't see. Where is that? I can't see him. Oh, he's behind the bridge, that's why I can't see him.
So it's just down here by the Hockenheimring building, isn't it?
Yeah, so they do have somebody monitoring the pit lane speed limit. And that is how it's done, with a human.
Pointing a gun.
Yeah. If ever you wondered how they monitor pit lane speed limits, there is no fancy technology in most forms of motorsport.
Maybe
in Formula One. But like you're saying about sensors in the tracks, it is a thing in the UK. There was a system, I don't know if it still exists, it probably does roll out across all MSV tracks. It takes a photo of you
Correct.
If you go up four wheels off. Yeah. And then there's slam dunk evidence that you've upset the grass in JP's tracks.
It's a metal plate basically run over. It has a sensor underneath. You run wide, the weight of the car triggers the plate, sends a photograph to race control, and it's incontestable evidence. Yeah. So they sit there and just go, there you go. It's just like being on the road.
Only at Graham Hill Bend or at Brands Hatch, or now rolled out across all parts of MSV tracks?
Not all parts, but some other circuits. Yeah. And I think part of the idea is to not send a bulletin to tell you where they are, because you shouldn't be triggering them anyway, I think is the view.
Yeah.
Because we've got to keep off the grass, haven't we?
But what if you're bad, like I am, and I can't actually keep the car on the track? You know, I'm not doing it on purpose. I just can't keep the car on the track.
Well, it's one of the things we often say in historic racing and stuff, because you've got, you know, we said cold brain and cold tyres, but you also have cross-ply tyres and
cold
drum
brakes
and all that kind of stuff. And sometimes, as you say, it's totally unintentional. We haven't got lovely BMW C2s here where they've got slicks and a bit of wing and a bit of aero and a modern technology. We're talking 78-year-old cars, and it's no wonder sometimes you just go, well, it didn't go where I meant it to go. It just did its own thing. It's got a mind of its own.
Don't penalise me for something I didn't mean to do.
Exactly.
But I do know, for instance, at the Spa 24 Hours, they still use humans at certain parts of the circuit, and those humans are standing there watching the limit, and for every car that goes four wheels off track or whatever the rule is at a particular event, that will then be noted down, sent to the race stewards, and then they will have a penalty system. So a huge amount of work, considering if you think to Spa back in the day when they didn't have the gravel traps they do now, lots and lots of work to be done with a basically a marshal standing at the top of Radio watching a car go four wheels off, note. Four wheels off, note. That's why also in the middle of the night, drivers get a little bit more, let's say, flexible and push the boundaries a bit more because they know that the marshals are either asleep, because they have to sleep at some point, or because of the lack of visibility, because it's dark, are less likely to actually see you do it. So that is certainly how it's done at Spa.
I don't know how or why you think you're suggesting drivers think such ways. Why would he do that?
Do you know what? My one mini challenge race, and I've just done a Hindhoff there and mentioned the fact that I've once been a racing driver. Mini challenge on the Silverstone National Circuit, where everybody takes loads of liberties into Brooklands on the inside line. You watch everybody else do it, you start doing it, and suddenly you get a penalty and nobody else does. But, yeah, I am guilty.
Don't be a sheep, then.
Don't be a sheep. Nobody else got a penalty, though. I don't know why they were looking at me.
So, some just under 7.5 minutes to go, Ben, of our first of these 2 one-hour races this weekend. Different drivers in some of the cars tomorrow.
The question still remains, the battle between the car we just saw, the 66 Meyer Van Riet, and then this 15 machine of Dirk Varmadam. Gap now 2.6 seconds, was 3.3, took 0.4 of a second out on the last lap. They're in the 53s now, so their Hankook tyres are starting to scream no more in these increasing temperatures here at Hockenheim. And I just wonder whether, gosh, is Fred Caprese falling into the clutches of Max Veels now? Yes, he is. So Caprese definitely hasn't got his tyre situation sorted. Four wheels off in the penultimate corner as well. I think he really is struggling with that car in the second half of the race. As I said, really good on cold tyres. Got himself up from fifth position on the grid into second by turn two. Absolutely mega start, but has struggled ever since. The car hasn't quite looked as planted as he might like. Looks a bit more like the rally car that he's been driving in the French Tarmac Championship over the last couple of years, as loose and pointy as it might be. Maxime Hussein leads by 19.9 seconds now. Dirk Varmadam second, but only 1.6 seconds now is the gap. It was a good lap from Lorenzo Van Riet the last time. And with 6 minutes remaining, we still could have a battle on our hands for second.
Yeah, not the day for the second Van Riet car, the number 72 entry. Not only have they had a drive-through penalty added for pit stop too short, they've now just had another black and white flag for disrespecting patent track limits. Now, I think that may be their third warning for on that car. So, got to keep it clean. Interesting enough, it was on the outlap. He just left the pits and then just went a little bit wider. Hadn't quite dialed back in again. And now car 27. It's Fred Caprese. He's also had a warning for track limits.
That's not surprising, having seen the way the car is moving around. Interesting, though, if that is in reference to what we just saw, that is the exit curve of the penultimate turn, which also is the kind of the turn-in point for the final turn of the lap. So that last two turns, I'm sure back in the day, used to be one singular kind of hairpin, and it has now become two slightly tighter turns, but you still treat it in about the same way. Another track limits issue for the 73
Barry
car,
Elk,
Barry
yeah.
Van Elk, at turn one. And he definitely didn't mean to do that, did he? There was
no,
a slide on.
No, I think that one, you get the whole point of track limits is if you're gaining advantage, any performance advantage. And I think that Van Elk, very clearly, just got something slightly wrong. So discretion, better part of valor, decided to let the car run wide and go clearly over the track limits edge and onto the runoff area. But by doing so, he's actually lost the time he might have gained at the beginning. So you've kind of given it back automatically. Not sportingly, but you've done it automatically, so you've gained no advantage. That's the real reason that the race control and the stewards and the officials give any track limits, any penalties, because you're basically getting advantage by it. And in that case, Van Elk most certainly didn't. He lost out.
It's
penalised and self-punishing.
Yeah, exactly. It's a tough corner, though, isn't it, turn one? Because you've got that big sausage on the inside. These cars probably could take the sausage, but you are going to unsettle them, and they're going to bobble around. And if they bobble in the wrong direction, you end up spitting yourself in the wrong direction.
And I think the eye's drawn into it. You've raced, Ben, and you come down to that, and it's
thanks for mentioning.
It's a very tight turn, that corner. As you say, there's a sausage curb in the middle of it, or sorry, on the apex of it. But the eye is drawn to the fact if there was a wall or something much closer, you would naturally go in at a different pace because the limit is there. It's self-preservation almost. But because there's such a big runoff area and the track limits are all marked, but they're painted, as we said earlier, it's not physical, apart from that sausage curb, but the apex. If you clip that, the car, as you say, is going to skip a bit to the left, and it's better just to discretion, better part of valor, acquiesce and let the car run wide. But if there was a wall there, you wouldn't do it. So it is tempting to go in there. I wonder how much I can get away with it. Driver's mentality, they'll always try and find a limit and push it. In fact, if anything, they'll probably try and find the other side of the limit and come back to the limit, rather than go up to it, if you see what I mean.
And if there was a gravel trap on the outside, like we've seen now at Spa with a load of gravel put in some pretty critical places, you also approach it differently too.
Well, I find it extraordinary because we mentioned how long we've been racing and stuff. When I go back to the first days I raced at Spa, though, with the gravel traps that are there now, I've seen that almost the cycle of life. They've gone and become runoff areas, and now they've come back to gravel again. You just think, I've been doing this too long.
And also, what an epic waste of money.
Yeah, and the days went Spa, and also when the pit exit used to be at the bottom of Eau Rouge.
Oh, yes.
So imagine I've often said, imagine that at night, in the wet, in a Group C car. Cars coming out. Yeah, it focused the mind, put it that way.
Back in those days, there was no pit lane speed limit, right? So you were you were accelerating out of your pit box.
Yeah, it was get out of the way.
Yeah.
No mechanics said, get out of the way. We've got a race to get on with.
66 now, right on the tail of 15 for second position. So this is Lorenzo Van Riet on the tail of Dirk Vamadam. After taking their drive-through penalty, dropping down to fourth position, they've already managed to dispose of Fred Caprese, got themselves back onto the podium, and now they are right on the tail of Dirk Vamadam to get themselves back into the position that they were in pre-penalty. We've only got a minute and 40 seconds remaining of this race, so they've got to get it on quickly. But we've got a nice, tasty battle there for second, and for Fred Caprese, as we mentioned earlier, also massively under pressure from Max Vils in that fourth position. So it doesn't really matter for their championship, because Caprese is in the Belgian championship, Vils is in the Netherlands championship, so two separate point scores for them. As a battle further back still rages for actually both leading their classes, the trophy for Belgium and the trophy for the Netherlands, and that is 35 and 97. And Van Elk, Van Riet, Pim Van Riet aboard the 72 car to the outside to try and go around the outside of the Janssen Brams machine. Is it going to work? I don't think so, but maybe a cutback, get on the throttle. Not quite as flamboyant on the throttle as we've seen from some of the other drivers, and so it doesn't work for the moment. Just 0.4 of a second, though, now between our battle for second spot. So I really do think we might get a change of position. Are we going to get another lap of green flag racing? The clock is just 30 seconds away from expiring. Where is our leader, though? He's only in the second sector of the lap, so this could well be, unless we have a plus one lap, this could be the last lap of the race. So the last opportunity, one of the last braking zones for Lorenzo Van Riet. Can't find a way through at the hairpin. Not quite close enough on the exit of turn two, but now the fiddly stuff. Can he jam it down the inside in some of these shorter braking zones around the rest of the lap? And of course, are we going to get the checkered flag ready? Looking at the marshal, yes, checkered flag is ready. So this is the last lap. And therefore, checkered flag is going to fly for our winner in just a few moments. We haven't seen very much of Maxime Hussend. He is now in the stadium section at the end of the lap. As these two enter the stadium section. And really, time is running out here for Lorenzo Van Riet to find a way through. We do have one final lap. No, checker flag is out. Just behind the barrier there, checker flag is out, and we have a winner in Maxime Oostende. Will there be a last lap lunge down the inside into the final couple of turns? There is a door half ajar. Is it about acceleration through the final turn? Not quite close enough. A good effort, a good comeback from Lorenzo Van Riet after that penalty. But checkered flag falls for Dirk Vlamertam, who gets second, and the Meyer Van Riet car finishes in third position. Still battling going on circuit. This continued battle for 10th spot between Jansen Brams and Van Elk Van Riet, which is Pim Van Riet. And again, a lot of sliding going on. Again, the white machine can't quite find a way past the number 97. 10th and 11th, these two cars are. And still bubbling over the curves. When they hit a curve, the car does kind of jump around quite a bit. They're in the Mercedes-Benz Arena right now. Slight missed apex there from Steve Brams. And that is going to give more momentum to the 72 car of Van Riet. Gets very, very close into the stadium section. Not too much of a braking zone into the first part of it, but there is a possible opportunity if you want to jam it down the inside of the sash curve. Is he looking at that? Possibly a door open, has a nose in there. Just allows a 97 car to know he's there, but he gets a snap of oversteer. And that is day done then, I'm afraid, for the 72 car. Lots of effort over the last couple of laps to try and get up into 10th position. But unfortunately, that snap of oversteer in the sash curve means it is not possible. And Jansen Brams picks up 10th position. Van Elk, Van Riet in 11th.
It was the mildest of twitches, as you say, on snap oversteer, and it suddenly put three car lengths between them, didn't it? And just that tiniest little bit cost you that much track time.
Momentum is key in one-mate racing, whether they've got 420 brake horsepower or 350 or 120 or even 60, I think the C1 had. Maxime Oostende is the leader, the winner of the first race of our weekend here at Hockenheim. BMW M2 CS Racing Cup's round three of their championship, presented by Hankook. And Oostende has been the class of the field, hasn't he? Pole position by a second, and eventually a 23-second victory over a one-hour race, which works out about half a second a lap.
Yeah, I feel in some ways that we've overlooked him a little bit because he's been so imperious at the front there that he's kind of just disappeared and walked off with it and done everything absolutely right. Pole position, race win, fastest lap I think he got, didn't he, as well? Did he get the fastest lap?
Yeah,
he
think
did.
So
he's gone and done everything right, but we've concentrated on what's going on behind him, but he's just been doing it exactly right, and it's just doing it slightly better than everybody else, and gets the top step, the trophy, the whole works. Great job from Maxime Oostende there, our race winner of our first BMW C2 race of the M2 race of the weekend. C2, I was thinking C1s and C2s, and I was thinking about Citroën Z. Sure, BMW wouldn't thank me for that. I meant the M2, my apologies.
Here are the results then. Bas Kooten 1-2, the 54 machine ahead of the 15 car, which has ended up just ahead of the De Meyer Van Riet Swift Racing events in third position. That will be your podium. Frederico Preze will be on the podium as the winner of the Belgian category, fourth overall. Then the two Ferry Monster Autosports, the 14 and the 74, fifth and sixth position. Seventh position for our only Polish entry. Eighth position for Barry Van Elk in Blueberry Racing's first car. And then best of the Netherlands trophy cars, De Vrie and De Luy in the 35 machine. Belgian Racing in 10th position overall, best of the Belgian trophies. And then second in the Netherlands trophy, the Van Elk Van Riet 72. The 24 Equipe Verschuur finishing up in third in the Netherlands trophy. And we did lose just one car, Giovanni Scamardi, on lap one for JJ Motorsport. We'll see him back out tomorrow for our second race.
This program is a Radio Show Limited production.
Tell your friends there's more at RadioLeMans.com.